Hello, this is Tamara with the Decatur Herald and Review. It's Wednesday, September 9th. Let's begin today's reading on the front page with the article, September 11th, 125th Anniversary. Actually, that's 25th Anniversary. When Strangers Stepped Up. And we have a photo of the cast of Come From Away, rehearsing the musical based on the true story of passengers forced to land in a small Canadian town during the September 11th, 2001 attacks. From left to right are cast members Mitchell Van Zandt, Ally Moffatt, Morwen Coney Jr., and Jason Albright. Standing behind them is Doug Bishop. From Donette Beckett, Indicator. Mount Zion Woman's 9/11 Detour echoes story of Canadian-based musical. Come From Away performances will be on stage September 11th through 13th at the Albert Taylor Theatre in Schilling Hall at Millikan University. Show times are 7:30 p.m. on Friday and Saturday and 2 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. Tickets are available at the door or on the Theatre 7 website. The general admission tickets are $20. Not all stories start at the beginning. After the September 11th, 2001 attacks, airplanes still in the air had to land somewhere. Since eastbound jets were not allowed to land at American airports, several small airports in Canada were willing to accept the passengers and crew. The surrounding towns gave them the support and supplies they needed during the scary time. The touching story was made into a musical, Come From Away. Theatre 7 will perform the show September 11th through 13th at Albert Taylor Theatre in Millikan University's Schilling Hall. It's not a 9/11 story. It's a 9-12, 9-13, 9-14, 9-15 show, said Theatre 7 director Jerry Johnson. It's not a tragic story. It's an uplifting, heartwarming story. The experience was a positive light during a dark time in the nation's history. As a former flight attendant, Mount Zion resident Sherry Holman, 65, lived through a similar story 25 years ago. The Tony Award-winning musical Come From Away is set in Gander, Newfoundland, in Canada. It's based on a true story about 7,000 people stranded in the small town. Holman's plane, however, landed in St. John's, another town in Newfoundland. They took all those planes in when nobody else would, she remembers. We couldn't go back and we couldn't go forward. Holman had been a flight attendant with American Trans Air for more than a year, although she wasn't a working crew member that day. Her plane was returning to Ohio from London. They made an announcement that we were going to be diverted to Gander, Newfoundland, and that it was not mechanical. She said, that's all they told us. The plane instead landed in nearby St. John's, while others were diverted to other nearby airports. That small airport normally would get one international flight a week, Holman said. They had 27 international planes land within just a few hours. The people of the towns were also willing to accept the new visitors. Strangers were welcoming strangers into their homes. Others were housed in churches, centers, and other facilities. However, they were not allowed to bring any other belongings except for the women's purses. During their 7-hour wait on the plane, the visitors changed into the clothes they had stored away. I seriously thought we were going to find some place, sleep on the floor, and leave the next day, Holman said. Holman and her fellow visitors were in St. John's for 5 days before they were able to return home. What the St. John's residents didn't supply, the visitors were able to find at a nearby store. Anything you wanted to eat was free, Holman said. Like most people that day, time was spent watching television, but we got to where we could hardly watch it, Holman said. Instead, the group visited the sites and held kitchen parties. We just sat around in a big circle and we sang songs. We did dances, all kinds of crazy things, Holman said, but it was a way to lift our spirits. The play is expected to do the same. Johnson had the opportunity to speak with Holman after rehearsals had begun. It's just an amazingly good play, he said. It just blew me away because the story it has to tell. It was so inspiring. The events and aftermath of September 11th, 2001 motivated the Canadian people to help those in need. Come From Away shows the amazing, inspirational expression of kindness, gratitude, and human connection, Johnson said. People are good regardless of the situation that they find themselves in, he added. Folks will step up and help those in need. Again, Come From Away will be on stage September 11th through 13th at the Albert Taylor Theater in Schilling Hall at Millikan University. Show times are 7:30 p.m. on Friday and Saturday, and 2 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. Tickets are available at the door or on the Theater 7 website. General admission tickets are $20. From Valerie Wells, in Decatur. Local history. Decatur High School pillars found, preserved. For years, the Romanesque pillars that adorned the front of the Decatur High School downtown were thought to be lost or destroyed when the building was demolished. They were not. The pillars, which were not solid, but smaller pieces set one upon another to create the 20-foot-high pillars, have been found and placed at Decatur Civic Center on the site where the school once sat. Byron Bowman, Municipal Services Director, and Rick Baker, Municipal Services Operations Supervisor, both City of Decatur employees of 37 years each, have been honored by History of the Heartland with preservation awards. On page A3, we have a photo of one of several sections of the pillars that once graced the front of Decatur High School and is now part of the Decatur Civic Center grounds. The Civic Center sits on the site where the school once stood. And we have a photo of Rick Baker and Byron Bowman being presented with preservation awards from History of the Heartland to recognize their efforts to preserve portions of the pillars that had been part of the Decatur High School building. And now continuing with the article. A little over 2 years ago, History of the Heartland inquired about the DHS pillar sections, and Byron was kind enough to take us to see them in person, said Ann Owens, founder of History of the Heartland. They had been moved by city staff several years ago to municipal services, and both of these gentlemen knew they had some type of value and seemed to still have hope they would be repurposed when Brett Robertson, president of the History of the Heartland Board, and I met with them and saw the sections. Those sections were formally unveiled on Monday. Some of the sections are located near the Stephen Decatur Monument at the corner lot of the Civic Center parking lot, while the others are on the stone court next to Franklin Street near the World War II Memorial. The pillars graced the main entrance of the school, said Marvin Sowers, a 1971 graduate of Decatur High School. And like most people who remember that building, he assumed they were long gone. I think this is great, Sowers said. It's preserving history. When the building was demolished, people could take bricks as keepsakes, added Radine Cox, a 1967 graduate, but she never got around to acquiring one. I think it's a really cool idea, and it's a piece of history, and I love history, Cox said. It's really nice. I didn't even realize they still had them. Decatur High School closed in 1975, and a new building, off Mound Road, opened in fall of 75, Stephen Decatur High School, became a middle school in 2001, and briefly returned to being a high school from 2012 to 2015, during the remodeling of Decatur's remaining high schools, MacArthur and Eisenhower, when students were displaced from those buildings during construction. Middle school students attended classes in the former Decatur Area Technical Academy during those years. With the discovery of the pillars, Owens said, History of the Heartland contacted Steve Kelly, a historic preservation specialist and 1972 graduate of Decatur High School. Chris Brodnicki, general manager of the Civic Center, brought the idea to the board, and it was approved. It took four men and three trucks to move the pieces for phase one of the project. Phase two, Owen said, will be placing a sign identifying the pillars and a photo of Decatur High School during its lifetime with the pillars in place. I went to high school for 1 year in the old building, and it was my favorite year of high school, said Robertson. It was an enormous building and covered a whole city block, and it was just huge. And you had a sense that you were part of something bigger than you were. You were being initiated into the community, and that was the mystique of this huge building. Local news in brief. Anderson named Decatur Director of Finance Treasurer. Michelle Anderson has been named Director of Finance and City Treasurer for the City of Decatur. Anderson is a Macon County resident and comes to the city after serving as Chief Financial Officer of Clarkson Grain Company in Cerro Gordo, where she oversaw the company's financial operations and provided financial leadership in support of strategic decision-making and long-term growth. She has nearly two decades of finance and accounting experience. She holds a Master of Business Administration degree from Baker University in Baldwin City, Kansas, and a Bachelor of Science in Business with concentrations on accounting and finance from Eastern Illinois University. Prior to Clarkson Grain, she spent more than 18 years with Archer Daniels Midland Company, serving in a progression of leadership roles across internal audit, accounting, financial planning, and analysis and controllership. She began her new job Tuesday. African American Cultural Society getting Illinois Humanities Grant. The African American Cultural and Genealogical Society and Museum has been named a recipient of one of the Illinois Humanities 250th Anniversary Gift Program. Founder Eleanor Hood said half the $5,000 grant will be used for regular expenses, while the other half will go into the organization's building fund. They are searching for a new and larger location. The Illinois Humanities Gift Program is part of a statewide initiative commemorating the United States' 250th anniversary. Through this initiative, Illinois Humanities awarded a total of $250,000 to 50 history, heritage, archival, and cultural organizations across Illinois that create, preserve, and amplify stories and histories. College and Career Fair set September 15th in Decatur. A college and career fair will be from 9:30 to 11 a.m. Tuesday, September 15th, at the Decatur Indoor Sports Center, 1295 West Wood Street. The fair, sponsored by Millikan University and Richland Community College, will include more than 30 colleges and universities to help high school juniors and seniors and community college students plan their next steps. All Macon County and area high school students have been invited. From our food section today, page B5, we have recipes for chicken marsala and chicken paillard. Revisit the classics. From bistro menus to your table, these venerable dishes are always in style. Chicken marsala is all about the sauce. It's a marriage of a classic French pan sauce technique and Italian ingredients, Marsala wine from Sicily. Seems French residents and chefs living in Sicily in the 19th century combined Italian-style chicken scallopini with a French-style pan sauce reduction made with local fortified wine, Marsala. Today, the dish is more closely associated with Italian-American cuisine because the formula was brought to America by Sicilian immigrants. Pound-for-pound chicken paillard is easy. The culinary term paillard refers to a boneless cut of meat, such as veal, chicken, turkey, or pork, that has been butterflied and pounded very thin and cooked rapidly. Pounding the meat tenderizes the flesh and creates an even, flat cooking surface. The cutlets are then swiftly pan-fried until golden brown and braised in a bright sauce of lemon and butter. There are variations on that theme, but the traditional sauce is lemony, and the cutlets are served with crisp greens piled on top or arranged on the side. For a complete list of ingredients and cooking instructions, see the in-print page B5 of the Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday, September 9th. Now from our opinion page, our topic is working for workers. First column from Sean McCutcheon. McCutcheon's a free speech advocate and electrical engineer. He wrote this for Inside Sources. Republicans favor growth, opportunity, investment. For generations, the political map of America was simple and stable. Democrats enjoyed the loyalty of organized labor. Republicans drew their strength from business. Union halls were Democratic strongholds. The Republican Party was associated with corporate boardrooms and country clubs. That map has been redrawn. Conservatives now speak the language of wage earners, and a growing share of working-class voters are noticing. The change is visible in communities that Democrats once treated as reliable territory. Voters who punch clocks, drive trucks, weld steel, and keep the lights on are reassessing their affiliations. They want good jobs, affordable housing, manageable household costs, and a realistic path to a better life through honest work. Those priorities increasingly align with Republican arguments about growth, production, and opportunity, rather than with the older Democratic formula of union leadership, expansive government programs, and cultural messaging that often feels like socialism and distant from reality. Union leadership has long been closely tied to the Democratic Party, and yet rank-and-file members do not always follow. The 2024 presidential election offered a clear illustration. The Teamsters declined to endorse either Republican Donald Trump or Democrat Kamala Harris after months of internal polling and member interviews. The union cited deep divisions and limited commitments from both candidates. Its polling showed Trump receiving majority support among members in surveys during the campaign. Leadership stayed neutral, while many members did not. Working Americans do not need another politician explaining how important workers are. They need work that pays enough to support a family. They need housing they can afford, reliable transportation, accessible health care, and energy that keeps homes warm and factories running. They need employers willing to invest and government policies that do not needlessly discourage hiring, construction, and production. Speeches about solidarity ring hollow when Democratic policies lead to paycheck shrinking and opportunities vanishing. Republicans have emphasized manufacturing revival, domestic energy production, deregulation that lowers barriers to building and hiring, and private investment that creates jobs. These priorities speak directly to the material conditions that determine whether a family can get ahead. Democrats stress organized labor, stronger working protections, public investment, and government programs aimed at economic security. In practice, too many of those approaches have coincided with slower growth, higher costs, regulatory obstacles that deter investment, and a cultural posture that sometimes treats traditional work and traditional communities with disdain. The future of American work will require welders, electricians, machinists, mechanics, technicians, and construction workers, and countless other skilled professionals alongside engineers, managers, and computer scientists. The old argument that pits college against vocational education is increasingly irrelevant. America needs both. Policymakers should treat them with equal respect. The working class is not waiting for union leaders to make endorsements that protect their own political power. They are deciding, on the evidence of their own lives, that Republican candidates and policies deserve their support. In recent cycles, that evidence has often pointed toward the party that talks less about managing decline and more about restoring the conditions for productive work. On Labor Day and every day, people who work for a living insist on being treated not as political assets, but as citizens capable of deciding for themselves. The Republican Party's growing appeal among the working class is not an accident of personality or temporary protest. It reflects a deeper realignment around the practical requirements of earning a living, supporting a family, and building something that lasts. We'll read our second column from the opinion page in part two of the newspaper. Legal briefs. Osborne Estate, file claims by August 2026. Tracy Dean Osborne has been named independent executor of Judith M. Osborne's estate. Claims against the estate must be filed with the Macon County Circuit Clerk or the executor's attorneys by 6 months from this notice, first publication, or 3 months from mailing, whichever is later. Any claims not filed by then are barred. Dated August 26, 2026. Decatur auction, 5 units online, September 7th through 17th. Decatur Storage Rentals of America will auction 5 units, September 7th through 17th, 2026, online. Units A008, A018, B078, E124, I416. Owned by Chelsea Ginger, Wanda Baker, Angela Bashirs, Victoria Tyndall, Colton Crum. Sell via storagetreasures.com. Bids start September 7th at 10 a.m. and September 17th at 10 a.m. Call 217-292-7070. On Thursday, September 24th, at 5:30 p.m., Forsyth's Planning and Zoning Commission will discuss a request by Illinois Health and Wellness, LLC, to amend its permit for 1401 Hickory Point Drive, allowing a drive-through and sale of medical cannabis. The meeting will be held at Village Hall, 301 South Route 51. Public input is welcome. Questions can be directed to Ryan Raleigh at 217-877-9445. This could impact zoning and local business operations. Now from nutritionist Barbara Intermill, lessons from Alaska. We just returned from a remarkable trip to our country's 49th state. Alaska did not disappoint. Besides its spectacular display of oceans, mountains, glaciers, and wildlife, this land carries a rich history. One story that caught my attention, because it's nutrition-related, involves Alaska's state tree, the Sitka spruce. Sailors explored the coasts of this large territory in the late 1700s under the command of such notables as Captain William Bligh, of Mutiny on the Bounty fame, and Captain James Cook. These adventurers subsisted on food that could survive months, sometimes years, at sea, including such lovely fare as salted beef and pork, hard biscuits, and beans. Drinking water was stored in barrels for the long trips, and even this spoiled and turned slimy after a few weeks. That's at least one reason why these travelers often got their fluids from beer and other such beverages. Fresh fruits and vegetables were almost non-existent on these long voyages across the ocean. Thus, many sailors fell ill to scurvy, a disease that caused by a deficiency of vitamin C. In 1778, Bligh accompanied Captain Cook on a quest to map Alaska's coastline. By this time, Cook had learned that Alaska natives who drank a tea brewed with the chips of spruce trees did not develop joint pain, weakness, bleeding gums, and loose teeth associated with scurvy. Turns out the tips of the Sitka spruce trees, the bright green growth that appears on the branches each spring, is high in vitamin C. However, there was one problem with this life-saving tea. It turned sour on long voyages unless it was added to beer. Today, many Alaskan breweries feature vitamin C-infused spruce tip beer, just in case you forget to drink your orange juice. We also learned about Alaskan sledding dogs and their owners when we visited Juneau. These dogs are professional athletes, one trainer explained. As opposed to many of our furry friends at home, he told us these dogs have a daily caloric intake exactly measured to keep them lean, not skinny. Note taken. We met a young trainer who was getting her dogs ready to compete in the Iditarod, the yearly 1,000-plus mile race that honors the sled dogs that delivered mail and supplies during the days of the Alaskan Gold Rush. This young woman's dietary issue? Eating enough calories to endure the grueling night and day trek with her valuable dogs. I try to gain at least 30 extra pounds before the race to get me through to the finish, she said. Then, she said her main challenge is to pack enough easy-to-eat, high-calorie, nutrition-packed food to sustain her excessive calorie needs through the strenuous course. I suggested a high-calorie protein drink, and she politely reminded me of the fact that liquids tend to freeze readily when mushing across 1,000 miles of snow in Alaska. Right. Barbara Intermill is a registered dietitian, nutritionist, and author of Quintessential Nutrition, The Uncomplicated Science of Eating. Email her at barbara@quintessentialnutrition.com. Now, hints from Heloise. A hamper full of hints about washing clothes. Dear Heloise, I had a salad spinner I never used. It had been a Christmas gift. One day, as I was hand washing some delicate items, I wondered how I was going to get all the water out of these items. Then it came to me, use the salad spinner. I put the items in there and pressed the button that spins everything, and it worked. I didn't have to wring my delicates by hand and damage the fibers. I hung up a couple of things, and I laid other items out flat. They dried in less than an hour. Gum on clothing. Heloise, my 7-year-old daughter had a large wad of gum that got stuck to her dress. Where it came from is anyone's guess, but how can I get it off before I wash it? Patty J. in Lake Charles, Louisiana. Patty, put her dress in the freezer for at least 2 hours. Take it out, then with a dull knife, not a sharp knife, scrape the gum off. It should come off easily if it's frozen solid. If any gum should happen to remain, use pre-wash spray on the underside of the fabric and wash the item as usual. Removing mud stains. Dear Heloise, how do I get rid of mud stains on my husband's work clothes? He works out in the fields with wells and water, but comes home caked in mud. Since he's been promoted to foreman, I want him to look a little better. So how do I get the mud stains out? Betty Ann in Texas. Betty Ann, first, try to remove as much dirt as possible by using a mild to soft bristled brush. Then use a pre-wash spray that's sold in stores. You also can make your own pre-wash formula by mixing powdered detergent and ammonia. This works best with powdered detergent that doesn't contain a bleaching agent rather than liquid detergent. Remember to test for color fastness before using any stain-removing agent. Avoid a dryer fire. Heloise, I recently read there are more than 15,000 household fires that are caused by dryers annually in the United States. In addition to emptying the lint trap, after each load, you should also remove the built-up lint in other places. But which places? Now I'm worried. Ginger, here are the suggestions from a major manufacturer of dryers. Disconnect the dryer hose from the dryer, then reach in and pull out as much lint as you can. Blow out the hose with a leaf blower or use your vacuum if it has a reverse airflow ability. You can also use a shop vacuum. Blow air outward, then gather up the lint outside and place it in your trash bin. Check the outside lint trap and remove all the lint from there. Have a repairman remove the dryer drum and clean out any lint that might have collected around and underneath the drum. In addition to these suggestions, I'd like to add, never leave the house while there's a load drying and never go to bed with the dryer running. Never operate the dryer without your lint trap being in its correct place and wash the trap by hand every so often. From National News, Moments for Reflection. 9 documentaries, films, and specials about September 11th to watch as 25th anniversary approaches. 9/11 Reunited. Examines the catastrophic attacks and handpicks 6 stories around the life-changing connections made between rescuers and survivors. The 3-part docu-series reunite a firefighter to the family of the officer he couldn't save. It connects the 3 men who used a squeegee to escape a stalled elevator and the first responders who rescued a firefighter who spent 24 hours under the rubble. It's a harrowing documentary that honors the selfless acts by everyday people. The National Geographic docuseries was directed by Julian Jones and created in collaboration with the 9/11 Memorial and Museum and Production Company, 72 Films. You can watch it on Hulu. 9/11 United We Stand, 25 years later, on Disney and Hulu. Turning Point, Generation 9/11, on Netflix. Top of the World on CNN app, now streaming. 9/11 Reclaiming Ground Zero. Prime Video, September 11th. 9/11 Tribute in Light. ABC, Disney, and Hulu. National Geographic, September 11th. 102 Minutes Inside the Towers, History Channel, September 11th. Daughters of 9/11, CBS Paramount, September 11th. And finally, Robin Roberts presents Angel in the Rubble, the Janelle Guzman story, Lifetime, September 12th. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Tribune, Wednesday, September 9th. Please stay tuned.